Here we go.
Everybody is just on the beat screaming, kill, 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 this is hockey.
Oh my lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to the real great one.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It's Wednesday, January the 3rd, 2024. On this week's show, in the first period, we discuss the past week or so in the NHL on and off the ice. Also includes some news on the Ottawa Senators getting some clarity in their front office. Second period, Trevor Beggs from Locked On Canucks is going to join us to talk about the surprising Vancouver Canucks this year. And in the third period, we will read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But before we get into all that, time for our off-ice report. A couple of minutes about what's going on with us in our lives. And Doug, Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you. I'm told that this is the last day that you can really say that without it being an awkward interaction.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I was able to get it in under the wire.
Yeah. You know, you get it, you get 4 or 5 days past New Year's. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. And I, speaking of Happy New Year, let's start with the off-ice report about our lives and talk about something that you and your wife have decided to do, which I find interesting and I'd like to know more about. You did not send out Christmas cards. You sent out New Year's cards.
Did we?
Yes.
Well, we
and,
didn't.
And for a, we didn't, obviously it was your wife completely.
Completely.
But I'm curious why she obviously didn't consult with you at all.
No.
I was going to say, because she loves Christmas.
Yes.
And yet the card we got, first of all, it was mailed on the 29th, which I thought, okay, still December. I got it yesterday and it says Happy New Year from the Garcias. No mention of Christmas anywhere to be found. And I thought, that's an interesting choice, different. And I was just curious what led to that. And obviously you had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Not a damn thing.
Which also explains why you were not on the card at all. It was her in Washington at the Commanders-Chargers game.
Mm-hmm.
Her at a Chargers home game. Her at Disneyland, I'm assuming. It was maybe California Adventure. And
same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think another picture of her with the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting.
Yeah, you'd have to ask her about that, and I have no involvement in that whatsoever, not at all.
Any opinion or thoughts?
You know what? She listens to the off-ice report, so my thoughts are that that was a wonderful idea, and kudos to her for doing
yourself.
That. And I am an uncaring bastard who should be more
is uninvolved in her life.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then she is yelling at her podcast player.
I can see her smirk.
Yeah, no, she's upset with something I've said recently.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Yeah.
As a result.
Yeah.
Because I've misled you.
Well, I...
it proves that you don't had nothing to do with it because the photos I mentioned are not the photos that are on there. Not all of them.
Well, you think I was lying? I mean,
no. It just, you had no choice. You had nothing to do with any of it. All right.
I'm pretty sure I was in the pictures though, but,
you were in one picture. You were in the reflection of her sunglasses.
Yeah, probably more than that. But, so I think we know each other well enough that, there was no New Year's celebration that took place.
No.
Not that there really ever was. I mean, well, that's not true, actually. During the duration of this show, we did have a family tradition where we met at my mother-in-law's, and every hour we would pull out a different snack food to munch on.
Yeah,
that tradition has ended for whatever reason. I'm guessing, now that I actually think about it, probably COVID, and then it just never resumed after that. So
it was a lot of work for the people other than yourself who you were just eating. You were loving it.
Well, I was more than happy to throw some taquitos in the oven on a baking sheet. I mean, it wasn't like they were really going, you know, too hog wild on this, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. But
well, they weren't making them from scratch.
If they wanted if they wanted some help on that, I would have done my part. But I'm okay with it. You know, not I don't want to sound like I'm an old fart or anything, because it wasn't. New Year's has never been a huge party thing for me. You talked about your little excursion you had back in the day to Vegas and how that wasn't something that you that went all that well. And so you didn't want to repeat it. And we're not, neither of us are big drinkers or big partiers. So
yeah,
I don't even know. I mean, my wife was even talking about going to bed before New Year's. And I kind of was like, nah, let's just stay up. And as soon as the ball drops, then we can go to bed. Because the next day I actually did have kind of a big day that I needed to get some sleep for.
Eddie, but when your wife asks you to go to bed, she's not talking about going to sleep.
Oh, yes, she is.
Oh.
So, but
I thought you guys were going to ring in the new year in style.
The next day, I did have something eventful to do. I went to the Rose Bowl for a college football national semifinal game between two of the more historic programs in all of college football, University of Michigan and Alabama.
You still have some affinity for Alabama, yes?
Not really. I kind of I grew out of that. My mom is from Birmingham, Alabama. All of her family, huge Crimson Tide fans. And so I was raised as a big Alabama fan. But once I went to Fresno State, I was like, well, this is my school. Yeah. And I love this team, such as they are, scrappy little Bulldogs. And why am I cheering for this team that I have real no real connection to? I mean, you know, and of course, that coincided with them becoming a juggernaut in college football and winning hand over fist. But I no regrets. I will say there's one game every year I do watch and I do root for them, and that's the Alabama Auburn game, because that rivalry is such a big rivalry, and I love that game so much that I do watch that game and I do cheer for Alabama. But honestly,
the Iron Bowl,
I did go to this game with no rooting interest. I just wanted to see a good game, and sure enough, it was a good game. A little bit of old school football, some defense and running the ball, not a lot of high scoring that we're used to seeing in college football these days. But, probably the most historic college football venue out there in the Rose Bowl, filled to capacity, half of it gold, half of it red. It was a great spectacle, a good game that was decided in overtime. Had a lot of fun. I got a free ticket to it. There's a person that listens to the Ben Maller show who does some work for the Tournament of Roses parade. And I guess they all get a free ticket, but they only get one. And she's not a big football fan. So she offers it to me every year. And I don't know that I'll go every year. I did go the year before, but I did go this year and had a great time, and it was actually pretty trauma-free. I actually found a place to park right next to where the shuttle buses are, which was a coup. Was able to kind of, when you're by yourself, you know, I didn't leave until the game was over because it was decided in overtime.
I would hope not.
Fortunately, half of the fans stayed to celebrate. So all the Michigan people didn't leave. Oh, me and all the Bama fans were headed to the shuttle buses with haste. but kind of going by yourself, you're able to kind of navigate things a little bit easier. And I was able to kind of weasel my way kind of into the, I kind of cut in the line. I didn't mean to, but we got, there was me and a group of people, and this guy was with his little kid. And he's like, where do I go to get the shuttle bus? And the guy's like, go this way. So I figured, well, I'll follow him. Maybe it's different than it was before. So I follow him, and we end up kind of getting funneled to this place where you kind of went almost right under the buses. And once I got there and I saw they were letting people go, I was like, well, I'm not going to say no. So I was able to get right on the shuttle, got to the parking structure, got out of there before probably the great mass of people got there, got home pretty quick. So
they also probably looked and said, you know, the people that were waiting in the proper line were like, oh, that must be a celebrity line for the old people.
No, I think it must be celebrity. That guy must co-host the Puck podcast.
Yeah.
Get him in there right away.
Yeah. That's the late update guy for Fox Sports Radio.
That's right. Very recognizable. So,
yeah.
You know what's kind of funny about it? I hope I'm not going
too long. You should have dropped a Howard Cosell on him. The important people go first.
Yeah. No, that's not an old reference at all. But it was kind of funny because I went early. I didn't want to, you know, I went early enough that I didn't mind if I was going to have to wait around for a while. So I got there before the gates opened and I just hung out and, you know, it was a gorgeous day in Pasadena. So I'm usually not a big social person, but you've got people from all over the country flying in for this game. And I was kind of looking forward to chatting up with some folks like in line and just talking to them and stuff like that. And I was waiting for an opportunity and it never came. And I wasn't going to just be like, excuse me, sir, where are you from? I'm not quite like that, but I was like, you know, kind of making eye contact with people, nodding my head, smiling just to see if any conversation got started. Never did. I don't know if they were all hungover, and then I had two of the biggest jackasses sitting in front of me. I love going to live events.
Them holding a effing sandwich?
No, I actually would have rather had that guy. Unbelievable. But
what was the behavior of these guys?
Oh, every other word was the F word. And I'm not, you know, trying to act like it doesn't offend me that much, but when it's every other word and you're like yelling it, it's just like, hey man,
Frankfurter.
I know we're at a sporting event, but it's not like, you know, just have some decency around strangers. I mean,
Andrew Dice Clay would be offended by this.
Like, come on, you know, like, the guys come in and I'm sitting next to I'm in the Michigan section, and the guy immediately turns around and starts yelling, F Harbaugh, F Harbaugh. If he doesn't want to coach our team, F him, get the F out of here. He's a distraction. And we're just like, whoa, what's going on? The game hasn't even kicked off yet. What's this guy's problem? You know? And we're just like, okay. And they stood up the entire game. And it's like, I don't mind people standing up when there's something exciting going on or a big moment in the game. You know, like overtime. Yeah. Okay. But it's like, dude, can't anyway.
I'm guessing you got there early because you're still traumatized from the last time you saw Alabama at the Rose Bowl.
That was a long time ago. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
You and I got there late. We heard the kickoff as we were walking to the stadium. We heard this giant roar and I think Alabama returned the opening kickoff for a touchdown. Am I great? Great. Awesome.
You slapped the fence of the home we were walking past in frustration.
Wow. I don't recall that, but I'm not denying that it happened.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm like, I can see why Eddie would be like, it kind of much like me with Guns N' Roses. I get to every Guns N' Roses show, doors open at 6:30. I'll be there at 6:30 because the time I went late to a Rush concert, they were already playing. And I'm like, that was the first time I realized that the older bands go on time.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, the Rush concert starts at 8 o'clock. We got there at like 7:55. We're walking in at 8. They start playing. I'm like, how? What are they doing? It's 8 o'clock.
All right.
Luckily, it was an outdoor venue, so I could still hear it. Much like our experience at Power Trip, we could still hear Judas Priest.
No, it was Iron Maiden.
Or Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Even though we were literally a mile away from the venue.
Yeah. 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 Makes it a little easier when you're late, when it's something you can hear and not have to see.
It's funny how it's you and me together that
I blame you.
Experience of walking through neighborhoods when venues begin.
Yeah. I'm sure it's
you blame fault. Me for.
I do. Because
the shuttle becoming completely stopped in traffic to the point that we abandoned ship.
Exactly. So I'm sorry for bogarting all of the off-ice report. Is there anything you wanted to share before we get her going?
No, I will have some news maybe in a week or two.
Oh, teasing. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking at the, let me see. I'll tell you exactly when I'll have the news because that's right. Yeah, in 2 weeks.
Okay, mark your calendars, everyone. In 2 weeks, Doug's got a big announcement.
Yeah, I won't remember. A big announcement. Yeah, no, it's just I'll have something.
Hey, let's make these people come back.
Oh, that's right. I got a big announcement. No, here's my off-ice report. I did a little thing. We're going to talk about the Winter Classic here in a little bit. But I did an instant reaction recap for our good folks over at Patreon yesterday. So,
oh, nice.
If you want to see that or hear that, patreon.com/puckpodcast. And for those of you that are Patreon members, fourth line, third line, second line, first line, or all stars, you got a little something extra for you to listen to in addition to this week's show.
All right. Very good. Speaking of this week's show, let's get into the first period, and we will start off by talking about the action from the ice this past week, in air quotes. Now, if you recall last week, because Doug had a scheduling conflict, we did the show a day later, so that means we have one less day to recap in this week, so six days of action. We will start last Thursday with four games on the schedule. We'll start with the Flyers cooling off the Canucks, who we're going to talk about more in the second period. 4-1, Philadelphia with the win, scored three goals in the third period. Samuel Ersson stopped 18 of 19 shots before having to leave the game with dehydration. Carter Hart stopped all eight shots he came on and saw in relief.
I'm sloshing.
Yeah.
I can hear the water.
Too much.
You'd think hydration. It would freeze. That would be the problem out there.
Golden Knights beat the Kings 3-2 in what would currently be a first-round playoff preview. Oilers shut out the Sharks 5-0. Stuart Skinner, 25 saves for his fourth career shutout. Edmonton scored four goals in the first period, none of them by Connor McDavid. And the Hurricanes beat the Canadiens 5-3. Carolina's Andrei Svechnikov with the hat trick. Coming into the game, he had three goals on the season. Gets three goals in the game.
Question for you on that, yes. Kings-Golden Knights game.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Golden Knights your personal biggest rival for the Kings?
No.
Who is? The Ducks?
Yes.
Wow. All right. I didn't know, because that's the Golden Knights have been good since they came into the league. Kings have been good, and I guess the Oilers would be in there as well, as they've bounced the Kings the last couple of years in the playoffs.
I think you can make a very, very strong case. Historically and currently, the Edmonton Oilers are the LA Kings' biggest rival. They've had a lot, and there are, you know, some things off the ice as well, like the Gretzky trade. Obviously, right. connects them as well. But yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty different. I mean, I know some Kings fans who absolutely hate the Sharks. I know some Kings fans who definitely don't like the Golden Knights. I live with one of them. So yep. it's varied a little bit, but I would say currently right now with the two playoff losses in a row with Edmonton, and then you had the miracle on Manchester and all kinds of, you know, I'd say the Oilers probably should be the Kings' biggest rival. I know they don't probably feel that way. They've got the Flames, but yeah.
Off the top of your head, what did the Kings send to Edmonton for Gretzky?
Oh man, I think pretty sure Jimmy Carson was involved. That was a pretty big piece of it.
Edmonton thought they were getting Johnny Carson at the time.
Yeah.
We're getting the late night host.
So
hot damn.
Yeah.
That's just one of the more lopsided trades in NHL history. I mean, Edmonton went on and still won cups without him.
Yeah.
But still, it's just the Kings. And that trade is the entire reason the Sharks exist. The Ducks exist. The Golden Knights exist. The Coyotes exist. Like that made hockey in the Southwest a thing. So. That's all. And when I saw that game, I didn't know if that was a big rivalry game for you or if that was you personally. But I know it was a big game in the standings.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, no doubt. I mean, defending Stanley Cup champs coming to your building, it's always a pretty big game, I would think, for any team. But especially when you consider...
Well, it was in Vegas.
Was that one in Vegas? No, it was in Vegas. You're right. Anything else you wanted to talk about with any of those games on Thursday?
Nah, not much there. I mean, impressive win for Philadelphia over a good Vancouver team, but beyond that, not much.
Alrighty then, we'll move along to Friday where we had nine games. We'll start with the Panthers beating the Rangers 4-3. Sam Reinhart, two goals. Alexander Barkov, three assists to tie the franchise record for career assists. He already leads the Panthers in games played, goals, and points, so just looking to add another milestone to his illustrious career as a Panther. Jonathan Quick, by the way, taking the loss in net for the Rangers, something that hasn't happened a lot this year. Blue Jackets surprised the Maple Leafs 6-5 in overtime. Johnny Gaudreau with the OT game winner, just his 7th goal of the season. Auston Matthews did get his 29th of the year in defeat. Kraken knock off the Flyers 2-1 in overtime. Justin Schultz, the OT game winner. Joey Decord, 27 saves in net, as Seattle was riding an 8-game point streak at that point. Stars beat the Blackhawks 5-4 in overtime. Roope Hintz with the overtime game winner to complete the hat trick for Dallas. Coyotes shut out the Ducks 2-0. Connor Ingram, 28 saves for his 4th shutout this season. Coming into the year, he had 1 in his career. Red Wings edged the Predators 5-4 in overtime. Lucas Raymond, the OT game winner for Detroit. Avalanche get by the Blues 2-1. Devin Taves with his gets the game-winning goal in the 3rd period, and Alexander Georgiev had 28 saves in net. Islanders winners over the Capitals 5-1. J.G. Pageau had a 4-point game, 2 goals and 2 assists. Ilya Sorokin, 26 saves in net. And the Devils beat the Senators 6-2. Jesper Bratt, a 4-point night with a goal and 3 assists.
Do you hear that, Eddie?
What's that?
That's the phone ringing from Grandma Fiddler.
Hi, Grandma.
She's checking in 2024 to let us know that that Red Wings Predators game was her Grandma Fiddler game of the week. A very nice game from start to finish. As you may have heard on last week's show, I'm done watching the Ducks. So I thought, what other game can I watch? And I picked the Predators because I haven't been watching much of them this year. And it turned into a doozy. 3 goals combined in the first period. 2-1 lead for Detroit. Then a 3-2 lead after 2 for Nashville. Ends up being a 4-4 final at the end of regulation. Go into overtime and you get the game winner. I don't like shootouts. I love overtime game winners. Lucas Raymond with the winner there. So very entertaining back and forth game from a couple of teams fighting for playoff positions and playoff lives, and just a really fun game to watch. And the other game I definitely want to touch on was, you mentioned the Blue Jackets surprising the Maple Leafs, and that may have been the Eddie Garcia death nail for Ilya Samsonov in Toronto, as he gives up 6 goals on 21 shots and looked absolutely lost in net, did not look competent, did not look confident. And they made a move after that game to where they basically said, we're done with you in net. I mean, they kept him in the entire game. Meanwhile, Columbus changed their goalie. Elvis Merzlikins got the start. He gave up a couple goals, and they're like, get the hell out of here. Spencer Martin came in. He got the win. But it was not good hockey defensively from either team. But Toronto has to get these 2 points against Columbus. They had a nice lead. They score 5 goals in the first 2 periods. You got to win that game. And they simply could not keep the puck out of their own net. Ilya Samsonov, awful in that game. Yeah, and I wonder what it is about Toronto that no goalie seems to do well there, but they do well in other places, the same person. Frederik Andersen is doing very well in Carolina. Didn't do that as well.
Well, Jack Campbell's not doing so good in Edmonton. So
that's true. Jack Campbell resurrected his career. And Martin Jones playing better than we've seen Martin Jones in a long time. So maybe that is possible as well. But yeah, Ilya Samsonov struggling. And some people don't care and just want to kiss Susie Colbert. And others, like the Toronto Maple Leafs fan base, is very worried right now because that was a guy they thought they could count on in net as at least a 1A.
Yeah, we'll have more in the details on what Doug is talking about as well coming up in just a bit. Let us move on to Saturday, where we had 9 games on the schedule. Don't know what the hell my dog is barking at. I'm sure it's very important. I'm sure there's someone breaking into the house right now. But on Saturday, we had 9 games. We'll start with the Rangers beating the Lightning 5-1. Artemi Panarin with the hat trick for New York, and Igor Shesterkin had 34 saves in net on his 28th birthday. Happy birthday, Igor. New York, the first team this season to reach the 50-point mark. And Steven Stamkos, in the loss, played in his franchise record 1,037th game, passing Vinny LeCavalier for the most played in Lightning history. Hurricanes beat the Maple Leafs 3-2. Sebastian Aho's empty net goal ended up being the game winner. Bruins defeat the Devils 5-2. Boston was down 2-0, scored the next 5. David Pastrnak had 2 of them. Oilers get by the Kings 3-2 in a shootout. Connor McDavid had a goal in regulation and in the shootout as well. Jets defeat the Wild 4-2 in the first of a home-and-home between the two teams. Nino Niederreiter, pair of goals for Winnipeg. Penguins over the Blues 4-2. Sidney Crosby getting his 20th goal of the season in the win for Pittsburgh. Panthers over the Canadiens 4-1. Eetu Listerainen with two goals. Great name. Anthony Stolarz 18 saves in net.
I loved him in Andor.
Is that right?
Yeah. Eetu Listerainen was one of the guys that was an informant for the Empire.
Oh, wow. That's what a versatile gentleman he is.
Yeah.
Predators edge the Capitals 3-2 in a shootout. Sabres over the Blue Jackets in overtime 3-2. Jeff Skinner, OT game winner as Buffalo wins without their head coach, Don Granato, who missed the game due to illness.
Well, I wanted to mention the game that I watched, which was the Bruins-Devils. And it was going along, and I thought, this is a big game for New Jersey. They play an elite team. They're still trying to get themselves back into playoff. Solid playoff footing. And they had a nice 2-0 lead in the second period, and I thought they're doing well. And then very quickly, it unraveled on them. The first goal by Jake DeBrusque, okay, it's 2-1. But then within 4.5 minutes, two David Pastrnak goals and a Kevin Shattenkirk sighting as he gets the first of two goals on the night. And it was 4-2 going into the third, and New Jersey was looking in trouble. They did have a frantic third period with 18 shots, but did not score. Only goal was from Shattenkirk. And just an impressive display from Boston of how they can look like they're in a bad spot in a game midway through it and just almost flip a switch and the goals pour in and they take over the game and that's that. So I thought that was an impressive win from Boston and of them kind of showing their strength against a good team, New Jersey. And then the Rangers, very impressive win, absolutely dominant over the Lightning. They just made the most of their opportunities. They only had 21 shots, and yet they ended up with five goals. And when you see the power play clicking as it is, and Artemi Panarin is very hard to get used to with the bald head. I don't know. That's not a great look for him, but he's going with it. But they are... As bad as his hairdo looks, the team looks very good and looks like, again, it's going to be the class. Because when you have Shesterkin playing as well as he is and the offense clicking as well as it is, it's hard to imagine the team hitting a bump in the regular season that's really going to throw them. Now, in the playoffs, anything can happen. But when you get a hat trick from Panarin and Shesterkin only allows one goal on 35 shots, obviously you're going to win every time that happens. But they from top to bottom, they looked very, very strong.
Let's move over to Sunday, where it was a little bit busier than normal because there was only going to be one game on Monday. But Sunday, we had 9 games. Jets edged the Wild 3-2 in the second game of their back-to-back matchups. Dominic Toninato, with his first goal of the season, was the game winner. Marc-Andre Fleury in net for Minnesota did play in his 1,000th NHL game, fourth goalie in NHL history to play in 1,000 NHL games. Bruins beat the Red Wings 5-3. Trent Frederick, a pair of goals for Boston. Penguins down the Islanders 3-1. Lars Eller with a pair of goals, and Alex Nedeljkovic had 37 saves in net. Stars rout the Blackhawks 8-1. Mason Marchment with a hat trick for Dallas, and Scott Wedgwood had 23 saves in net. That was also the second of a home-and-home series between those two teams. Avalanche down the Sharks 3-1. Nathan MacKinnon, 2 assists, now has a franchise record 19-game home point streak to start the season. Flames get by the Flyers 4-3. Philadelphia's 9-game point streak came to an end. Oilers crushed the Ducks 7-2. Warren Fogle had a 5-point game, first of his career, with 2 goals and 3 assists. Lightning edge the Canadiens 4-3. Nikita Kucherov, the game winner, his 23rd goal of the season, also had an assist. And the Senators down the Sabres 5-1. Anton Forsberg, 45 saves in net for Ottawa.
Yeah, I'll start with the Ottawa game because I liked seeing the amount of depth scoring they got. I keep watching this team wondering if their star players are going to take over, the Stutzlas, the Kachucks, maybe even the depth players or depth star players like Giroux and Tarasenko. But it was the rest of the team that got the 5 goals. Dominic Kubalik, name you might be familiar with, but forgot was in the league. Zach McEwen, Mark Kostelic, and then Jacob Chychrun and Artem Zub from the blue line, all scoring goals. So none of the big guys came through. They still got a five-goal night. Very impressive from Ottawa's depth. And then the big win, I thought, was Calgary, who needs to start stringing some wins together if they're going to salvage their season and get into the playoffs. I think, you know, as we turn the calendar to 2024, if I were the Flames, I would be telling them, you got until the trade deadline to make me believe that this team is worth keeping together. Otherwise, I'm going to scatter you to the wind. You don't know where you're going. And it may not be a playoff team. You know, if you got a contract beyond this year, I may be willing to move you just to get some assets. But a nice game from them, a big win over a solid team, turns out, this year in Philadelphia. Samuel Ersin made it through the game this time. Did not have hydration or dehydration issues. But just an impressive win from Calgary, who needs to get a good game from Jacob Markstrom and did. Needs to get good games from a player like Blake Coleman and did. And if those kinds of things can become more consistent, then I can see them making a playoff push. But this was a big 2 points just to keep them within shouting distance of the playoffs.
Let's move on to Monday, where we had just one game in the NHL on January 1st, New Year's Day. And I think we've talked about this before, because every once in a while they'd play like another game. We're like, why is there any other game on this day? It should just be right. The one game. And they did that this year. And that was, of course, the Kraken hosting the Golden Knights there at whatever the hell that baseball stadium is called, where the Seattle Mariners play.
The Ballpark, yeah.
What is it called? Oh, I thought
the Mariners Ballpark.
That's right, Mariners Ballpark. Seattle getting the 3-0 shutout. Joey DeCord, 35 saves. That is the first shutout in Winter Classic history. So that's a nice little feather in his cap that he can hold on to. The Kraken won their fifth game in a row as well. Now, I mentioned I was at the Rose Bowl, so I did not see the game live, nor have I watched it yet on my DVR, but I did see the highlights. Looked like a beautiful day in Seattle. Sold out, 74,313 was the attendance. Certainly interesting jerseys for both teams. They did have the, I don't know when this started, but this has become a tradition for the Winter Classic. The players all wear some sort of costumes when they get off the bus and head into the stadium there. And the Golden Knights, all their players dressed up like Elvis. And for Seattle, they all dressed up in like fisherman's gear, the old, what is it? Pike's Place market there in Seattle, yeah, where they famously throw the salmon around, and they had like some, I guess they were like stuffed plush, kind of like stuffed animal fish that they were carrying around and whatnot. Yeah. So interesting there, but obviously the home fans going home happy in that one, their first Winter Classic up there in the Pacific Northwest. Doug, you watched it. You did a special reaction for Patreon. Tell me about this year's Winter Classic.
Well, it was a perfect event as far as I could tell, as far as the NHL from start to finish. The weather was outstanding. It was a nice cloud cover, so it gave this soft lighting around that wasn't bright sunshine that made them switch halfway through a period, as we've seen in the past. There was no problems with the ice melting. The ice looked great throughout the game. The crowd was very muted only because they're so far away from the actual action and the crowd mics of the broadcast, but The quality of the game was very good. Seattle played great from start to finish. They just stayed in their zones and took away what opportunities Vegas had. And Joey DeCord came up with an absolute gorgeous save on Jack Eichel in the third period. Beautiful pass to Jack Eichel. He's all alone. Tries to go top shelf, and DeCord made the glove save and held on. So that was the highlight. He's going to have that picture framed over his mantle, I'm sure, when he retires, because it was such an iconic moment. I loved the Kraken jerseys. I thought they were gorgeous. The Golden Knights, I said, are probably better in person than they are on TV, but absolutely loved the Kraken jerseys, the tribute to the Seattle Metropolitans and the color scheme they had. But, you know, it's a spectacle, right? They make them walk the long walk out with the Flames and all that and everything. And I was thinking, I'm done with the live performances. And then they bring out Seattle natives and Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Hart to play Barracuda in the first intermission. And I'm like, now we're talking. That's a legit get and good band and great iconic song. And
I mean, a bit older for us. We appreciate that. I'm sure the younger folks would have preferred Bad Bunny or somebody like that.
But the younger folks aren't tuning in, most likely. But they got somebody that I've never heard of before the game. So it all evens out. But if I was the backup goalie for either the Kraken or the Golden Knights, I would have said, hey, can I go watch the concert during the intermission? Do I really have to make the trek back to listen to the speech? I'm not even involved in this game. So I thought that would have been a fun thing for the broadcast. And then there's some beef I don't get. You know, I'm sure it's all fake. It's just for TV. But Paul Bissonnette and Bowie, the Kraken mascot. So they have Bowie show up at the set, and Bissonnette flips out yelling, keep him away from me, get him away from me. Bowie's chasing him around, trying to put a kick me sign on his back.
Oh,
Bissonnette not only doesn't allow him to do it, he knocks him down and then does the flying elbow. And I'm like, there's a regular person in that costume. You're a large human.
Could be a female for all we know, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And they cut away. Anson Carter, Liam McHugh, and Wayne Gretzky were howling with laughter. And I'm like, I bet the person in that costume is not howling with laughter. I bet they're probably breaking character and yelling at Paul Bissonnette to get the F off of him. Because he literally flopped right on him. And maybe they worked it out ahead of time. I hope they did. So that the person knew this was coming. Because I thought, I don't know about that. They're at a disadvantage because they got a visibility. They're looking at, you know, the life through a small mouth or something. And then they cut to something, a pre-recorded thing of Bowie dunking him in a dunk tank. But overall, it was a great event, top to bottom. Production was well done by TNT. Everything went off without a hitch. The weather looked good. It was a perfect event as far as I could tell from as a viewer. So well done by the NHL, by the Kraken as hosts. And I hope we see more non-traditional cities hosting stuff like this in the future. Hope the ratings were good enough to encourage the NHL to do it again. And that was the 39th outdoor game the NHL has played, Eddie. And we were there for the first one.
That is
we weren't crazy. there, but you know what I mean. We watched it.
So yeah, yeah.
39th already.
Yeah, I've not been to a Winter Classic. I've been to two Stadium Series games, and you're right. They are definitely spectacles. They're events to attend. They're not, you know, you can't see that great, but it's a fun thing to go to for sure. So hope everybody in Seattle had a good time. I know I was thinking there was an incident with a mascot recently. I'm almost positive it was an NBA game, and I think it involved Conor McGregor. I think he punched a mascot during a skit and actually hurt the person in the mascot. I think it might have been the Miami Heat. But
I'm assuming it was part of a skit, though.
Yes, yes. But it
Conor McGregor just didn't pull his punch.
It didn't go as well as expected.
And oddly enough, asking a UFC fighter
to
punch you is not a good idea.
I did Google mascot injury, and the first thing that popped up was apparently the mascot for the Baltimore Ravens has suffered a season-ending injury, Poe the Raven.
I was going to say Edgar Allen or Poe.
Yeah, they apparently had to cart it off the field. I didn't see this happen, but there was a serious injury to the mascot. Much like it's, and speaking of Seattle, remember back in the day, the Mariner Moose.
Oh, Mariner Moose. Yeah, that's the worst one.
Being pulled on a, what was it?
ATV.
Like a little all-terrain vehicle as he was kind of like water skiing on rollerblades. And
lost control, went into the outdoor wall and broke his ankle. And listen to Eddie laugh.
You know why? Because he's still smiling, even though the guy is clearly howling in agony under that mat. But yet, still smiling. Oh, God. Good stuff.
Mascots are the best.
I do enjoy.
I'm not Bowie's a weird one.
Yeah, yeah.
For the Kraken, but I get it. You
did
know,
you? So by the way,
a creature from the deep.
Getting off on a tangent, but I know the folks generally like this. Did you see the Pop Tart mascot at the Pop Tart Bowl?
Yeah,
yeah. That was pretty good. That was pretty.
And I liked the follow up. There was a Cheez-It Bowl.
Yes.
And he came out and he had a sign that said "Not an edible mascot."
Yes. Because
the Pop Tart was edible.
Yes. They pulled it off really well. So they had a guy in a girl in a suit that was a Pop-Tart, you know, had eyes and legs and was running around doing its thing. And at the end of the game, he jumps on a toaster. I guess he came out of a toaster to start.
Right.
So at the end of the game, it's like a kind of a motorized vehicle, but in the shape of a toaster. So he gets on the toaster. He's lowered down into the toaster to get, you know, as you will with a Pop-Tart. Yep. And then he came out the bottom, but of course it wasn't really him. It was a gigantic Pop-Tart that did have eyes on it. Yep. And the players actually could eat it afterwards. And boy, did they left nothing but like one eye afterwards.
It's a tradition unlike any other.
Good stuff. That was good stuff.
I mean, that's exactly. Look at the publicity that bowl game got.
Yeah.
Which is the point of it.
Yep.
Absolutely. So well done by them. Well done by the folks of Pop-Tart that got their money's worth out of their publicity.
Absolutely. Still one more day to talk about, and that was on Tuesday, 13 games on the schedule. We had the 67th meeting between Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin. Capitals get by the Penguins 4-3, and they both scored a goal in the game. For Ovechkin, his 830th career goal. He's now 65 away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. So nice to see for those two teams, see those two guys score again. I saw on the NHL Network, they had side-by-side pictures of, you know, those media shots that all the players do to start the season.
Yep.
Through the years, kind of flipping through, and Ovechkin certainly has gone from dark hair to gray. Crosby looks almost exactly the same.
Yes, he does.
Exactly the same.
Somewhere there is a picture of Sidney Crosby, which if he looks at it, he will die. But as long as he keeps it hidden, he will remain eternally young.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier, got another 20-goal season for him. So just keeps playing.
He's at the top of his game still.
Yeah.
And Ovechkin is not, but it was definitely a throwback, as you said. A great game. I'll talk about this one real quick before we move on to the other we're talking about it. Four goals in the first from Washington, and you're like, wow, what a performance. And then Tristan Jarry, okay, that's enough out of you, buddy. Let's get Alex Nedeljkovic in there. He finished it out, did very well, only allowed one goal the remainder of the game. But the damage was done. Those four were enough for Washington to hang on for the win. But seeing a game between two franchises that have been at the top or near the top of the NHL for a long time, both Stanley Cup champions in recent years, with Ovechkin scoring a goal, with Crosby scoring a goal. It was just a nice game of almost nostalgia. It was like chicken soup for the hockey fan to just watch those two teams and those two players play another game, and something that we've seen so many times, and both of them doing what we love to see them do, which is score goals and entertain us.
We had the Jets defeating the Lightning 4-2, Winnipeg riding a 9-game point streak at that point. 26 straight games, by the way, for the Jets, allowing three or fewer goals on the season. So
is that good?
That's certainly part of the reason why they're doing so well this year. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Avalanche got by the Islanders 5-4 in overtime. Nathan McKinnon, power play goal in overtime, the game winner. Now a 20-game point streak at home to start the season, as he is putting in his case for being MVP of the league this year. Oilers down the Flyers 5-2. Connor McDavid a goal and four assists. So a 5-point night for McDavid. Picked up his 900th regular season point as well. Fifth fastest to reach 900 points in his career. For Edmonton, they'd won six in a row at that point. And 14 of 17. For Philadelphia, starting to struggle a little bit. They've lost 5 of 6.
We should mention, by the way, the Kraken, with their win, 5 straight wins, and they have a 9-game point streak, which is the franchise record. They've been on a heater lately. So the teams on the outside looking in, like Seattle and Edmonton in the Pacific, both heating up and gaining ground quickly in the playoff race.
We had the Maple Leafs shutting out the Kings 3-0. Former King Martin Jones, 31 saves in the shutout. He is a Kings killer. Over the years, I think he has like 23 career wins now against LA, most of them when he was a San Jose, but filling in nicely for Toronto in an emergency situation. We talked about the Leafs goaltending situation. We'll talk more about it in a minute. William Nylander, 2 goals in that win for Toronto. Hurricanes roll over the Rangers 6-1. Andrei Svechnikov, 2 goals. Remember, he had the hat trick earlier this week, so he's heating up. Pyotr Kochetkov, 28 saves in net for Carolina. Bruins beat the Blue Jackets 4-1. Linus Ullmark, 26 saves in net. Predators blank the Blackhawks 3-0. UC Saros 21 saves in the shutout. Canadians surprised the Stars 4-3. Cole Caulfield's power play goal ends up being the game winner. Flames beat the Wild 3-1. Jacob Markstrom 28 saves in net. And Jonathan Huberdeau gets a goal, just his fifth of the season for Calgary. Panthers beat the Coyotes 4-1. Sergei Bobrovsky 21 saves. Florida's won 5 in a row. Alexander Barkov got an assist, so he's now the all-time assist leader in Panthers history. Canucks roll over the Senators 6-3. Elias Pettersson, 2 goals. Vancouver scored 5 goals in the first period, jump out to a 5-0 lead. Talk much more in the second period about the Vancouver Canucks with Trevor Beggs. And the Red Wings knock off the Sharks 5-3. David Perron back from his suspension, 2 goals, and San Jose has now lost 9 in a row.
Well, player, the only game I want to mention other than the one I already talked about, which was Capitals Penguins, is a game between two teams that you may not think, well, this is going to be a doozy of a battle, but it was, and that's the Panthers Coyotes, which was an interesting game for a few reasons, one of which both teams are doing very well, but I was intrigued by the fact that Florida scored 4 goals and 3 of them were unassisted. That's a rarity. You don't see a lot of unassisted goals, but 3 of 4 unassisted. And then Matthew Tkachuk with just his 6th goal of the year. He had 40 last year. So we talk about a lot of players struggling around the league. We don't talk much about Matthew Tkachuk because the team is doing well. He does have a lot of assists. He has 28 points, I think, on the season. So he's not struggling at points wise, but last year, 40 goals. The year before that, 42. This year, 6 as we approach the halfway point. So he's either due to take off goal scoring wise or is having the worst goal scoring year of his career. He's never scored less than 24 in a full season, 16 in the truncated COVID year of 2020, 2021, but only 6. He's basically on pace for 15 goals this year, and that is well below his average. So, but I thought it was a good game to watch because it's not usually, you know, usually there's a lot of the same suspects and same teams you watch when you see teams doing well. This was a game where I'm like, when's the last time I watched a Florida-Arizona game that was meaningful and both teams were competitive and doing well? It's been a very long time.
So that was the quote-unquote week that was on the ice in the NHL. Let us check the standings and see what kind of movement we had from our last show. We'll start in the West and look at the Central Division, and it is exactly the same as it was 6 days ago when we did the show. Colorado is still on top, Winnipeg in second place, and Dallas in third. The Avalanche, 51 points, tied for the most in the Western Conference. In the Pacific, it is also the same top three as our last show. Vancouver, 51 points, tied with Colorado for most of the West. In first place in the Pacific, Vegas is in second, and LA is in third. And the Kings still have 4 games in hand on Vegas, 3 on Vancouver, but again, they have to do something with it. We'll see if that's the case or not. Over in the East, in the Atlantic Division, same top three as our last show. Boston in first place leads the Eastern Conference with 52 points. Florida second place, Toronto in third. In the Metropolitan Division, you've got the Rangers still in first. There was a flip-flopping of second and third. Carolina is actually more than that. Carolina was the number one wildcard team in our last show. They've jumped up to the number 2 spot in the Metro. The Islanders slide from second to third in the division. As for your wild card teams in the West, speaking of flip-flopping, Nashville is the number 1 wild card team, Arizona number 2. It was flip-flopped in our last show. Arizona was 1, Nashville was 2. In the East, Philadelphia has dropped from second in the Metro down to the number 1 wild card team. Washington is still the second wild card team. As far as teams still in the hunt in the West, you've got Edmonton and Seattle who are heating up, both just 1 point out of a wild card spot. St. Louis and Seattle, or excuse me, no, it's not St. Louis. Who is
Edmonton
it?
And Seattle are 1 point out. St. Louis and Calgary,
3 points back. And then the wild cards over in the East, or should say still in the hunt, you've got Tampa Bay 1 point back of a wild card spot in the East. New Jersey, Pittsburgh, Detroit are 2 points back. And maybe you can help me check my work here as I do the playoff matchups on the fly here. In the West, you would have the Canucks against the Coyotes, first round matchup. Yep. Jets versus Stars.
Yep.
The 2-3 in the Central. Golden Knights versus Kings, we talked about in the Pacific 2-3 matchup, and Avalanche against the Predators. Those would be your first round matchups. In the East, you would have Bruins versus Lightning, Panthers versus Maple Leafs.
Bruins versus Capitals. Lightning are on the outside looking in.
Okay, thank you. Bruins versus Capitals.
Yep.
You would have Panthers versus Maple Leafs.
Yep.
Hurricanes would Islanders. Be against the Islanders, and then the Rangers against the Capitals.
Rangers Flyers. Let's recap that.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Washington's the second wildcard team, so they would – oh, that's right. Boston's the number one seed, not New York, I apologize. Okay, you're right.
So, again, Boston against Washington and the Rangers against the Flyers, and then Florida against Toronto and Carolina against the Islanders. The one I want to look at in the standings that I find intriguing, because you look at the category, the points are what we always look at, right? 43 points for the Maple Leafs. They're third place in the Atlantic. They're not far from being completely out of the playoffs. They're only 2 points out of being out of the playoffs. And if you look at Toronto, they've played 35 games and they have 18 wins. That's barely over half their games. They have 7 overtime or shootout losses, though. And that's why they're in the playoff position they're in. But they have the same number of wins as Detroit, as Pittsburgh. Those two teams are buried down in the outside looking in category. They have the same number of wins as the St. Louis Blues, who are buried on the outside looking in of the Western playoffs. It has not been a good season for Toronto, and I don't know if they're finally taking the approach of the regular season doesn't matter, but they're in danger of not even making the playoffs, because I think when it's all said and done, Tampa Bay is going to make the playoffs. New Jersey is going to make the playoffs. Pittsburgh has 7 wins in the last 10. They're coming on strong. Detroit has shown that they've turned the corner. Philadelphia and Washington playing better than expected. Toronto has to get it going here, or they are going to miss the playoffs, and that would be disastrous for that roster and that franchise.
Let's check in on your statistical leaders. Your points leaders, Nikita Kucherov of Tampa Bay with 63 points. Nathan MacKinnon from Colorado has 61. Connor McDavid, 53. Artemi Panarin, 51. David Pastrnak with 50 points. Your goal score leader is Toronto's Austin Matthews with 29. Nikita Kucherov, Tampa Bay, has 27. Sam Reinhart and Brock Besser of Florida and Vancouver with 24. Artemi Panarin with 23 points. Your goals against average leader is Aiden Hill of Vegas, 1.93. He is still not returned from his injury, but apparently due back soon. Cam Talbot of LA in second with a 2.10 GAA. You've got Jeremy Swayman of Boston at 222. Charlie Lindgren of Washington, 227, and Connor Hellebuyck of Winnipeg at 233. Save percentage leader, also Aiden Hill of Vegas at 933. Charlie Lindgren of Washington, 928. Jeremy Swayman of Boston, also at 928. Cam Talbot of LA at 925. And Alex Nedeljkovic of Pittsburgh is at 924. Your wins leader is Alexander Georgiev of Colorado, Sergei Bobrovsky of Florida, Connor Hellebuyck of Winnipeg, Thatcher Demko of Vancouver, all with 18 wins on the season. Let's check the big headline of the week is the Ottawa Senators getting things settled in their front office. Owner Michael Andlauer has named the president of hockey operations, Steve Steos, as the team's new general manager. Dave Poulin was named senior vice president of hockey operations. Ryan Bonus, assistant general manager, is now the associate general manager. As for Steve Steos, he has been the Senators' interim GM since they parted ways with Pierre Dorion on November the 1st, joined the Senators on September 29th after Landauer completed his purchase of the team. Steos had served as the president and general manager of the Hamilton Bulldogs in the OHL, which Andlauer owned, and Steos led them to multiple championships, so there's a relationship there. Steos had also been a special assistant with the Edmonton Oilers, whom he played 8 of his 16 NHL seasons with as a defenseman.
How convenient that yet another executive in the NHL just happens to be a player that played for that franchise. We'll see how they do. I mean, this is a tough situation. You got to give Michael Andlauer time to turn things around. it certainly, for the Senators fans, they look at the standings, they look at the results, and you gotta feel like it's just more of the same, right? They are fourth worst in the NHL with just 28 points. They're the dead last in the Eastern Conference. And so it's easy to think this is the same old Senators, but this guy just took over the ownership of the team last year. He's got to have time to get his people in place. And now he finally does have his president of hockey operations in place, his general manager in place. The next head coach that gets hired will be his head coach or his regime's head coach. He has his own vice president of hockey operations in place and a new assistant general manager as well. So a whole new front office in place under Michael Andlauer's ownership and leadership. And we have to let them have time. I know Senators fans don't want to hear this because they've been waiting for this team to turn the corner for many years. But you have to let this group have time to do what they can do and not judge them on the results of the team they inherited. This is not their roster. This is not their prospect pool. They need a couple years to put their imprint on the roster and make some moves and judge them based on the moves they make from January 1st on, 2024 on. Anything before that is not really this. It's not really fair to evaluate, unfortunately. So I'm curious to see what they do because it has got to be so frustrating in Ottawa. I know how frustrated I am as a Ducks fan. Ottawa has been struggling just as long, if not longer, have just as good of players and have drafted just as well and have been told many years, this is the year you turn the corner. This is the year they start being a contender. It's not there. They're dead last in the Eastern Conference as we start the year. But unfortunately, the clock has kind of been reset on the rebuild because of the ownership change and now the front office change.
Let's talk about some signings and roster moves, and it was alluded to earlier, but the Toronto Maple Leafs put veteran goalie Ilya Samsonov on waivers. He cleared waivers and has been assigned to the Toronto Marlies in the AHL. I looked it up because the Kings played the Maple Leafs. Do you know who the backup goalie currently is for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I saw his name because I saw them bring him up. I've never heard of him.
No.
But I know it was a guy that had been playing well for the Marlies and got called up, but I've never heard of him.
Dennis Hildeby.
Yeah. Yeah. I had never heard of him. And keep in mind, Joseph Woll is on injured reserve.
Correct.
So that's ultimately their starter. Ilya Samsonov was their 1A backup, and he was absolutely atrocious. The amazing thing to me is nobody claimed Samsonov. I get that he's struggling, but he doesn't have a huge contract. This isn't a guy that's making $10 million a year. He's making $2.4 million this year. He's an unrestricted free agent after this year. Nobody was willing to take a flyer on this guy and a chance and see if they could be the one that gets him back on, you know, a change of scenery, get out of the fishbowl that is Toronto. I just found that very interesting that nobody was like, yeah, we'll give this guy a chance in Nashville, in Anaheim, in San Jose, to turn his things around without the spotlight of Toronto and the playoff pressure. Because if you do, you got a guy that's a former first-round pick and has been a good goalie in this league in the past, and you could end up with a great asset in his prime for many years to come. And if it doesn't work out, if he still stinks, you walk away at the end of the year. You've lost nothing. It cost you nothing to get him, just a waiver claim, and you've made your you don't lose any assets at the end of the year.
Let's check in on the ER report. Columbus Blue Jackets defenseman Zach Werenski out 4 to 6 weeks with an ankle injury. Minnesota Wild goaltender Philip Gustafson is out a couple of weeks with an injury, and Kirill Kaprizov, their star forward, week to week with an injury as well, and Sabres captain Kyle Okposo week to week with a lower body injury. Law and Order report saw this come down just before we started to record. Coyotes forward Jason Zucker is having an in-person hearing with the Department of Player Safety for a boarding interference hit on Panthers forward Nick Cousins. I did not see that. But the in-person hearing means that there will be, right? That's automatically a suspension.
You're going to get suspension. It's just a matter of how much.
Right. Some random shots to close out the first period. The World Junior semifinals are set. It does not include Canada, who was upset in the quarterfinals by Czechia. So your final four at the World Juniors, USA versus Finland, Sweden versus Czechia.
Well, that's interested. Awful news for the ratings of the World Junior Championships.
Certainly in Canada, it definitely is.
In Czechia, they're going to be boffo.
Yeah.
But they certainly, especially the networks up in Canada, count on that those advertising dollars and the ratings that they get from the World Juniors. And for them, I mean, I can't remember the last time they were not involved in the semifinals. Can you?
No, but then
I didn't
know
if you saw it in the article or anything.
Yeah, I don't follow it that closely. I'm sure the Canadian fans can tell you, but
they remember it well. It ruined Christmas that year.
Also, in related news, I saw today that Minneapolis St. Paul has been awarded the 2026 World Junior Championship. So, first time it's been in the U.S. since 2018 when it was in Buffalo. We were doing shows back then, although we probably didn't talk about that too much at the time as well, because it's not, the World Juniors is not, you know, it's worth a mention. It's an important hockey event, but it's not, we've mentioned it before. It's not something that Doug and I are taking time out of our sporting life to pay attention to, especially with, you know, the NFL, right. College football is big for us, obviously the NHL. So it's just, unfortunately, not something that I have time for. And actually, the same could be said for the Pro Women's Hockey League, which started its inaugural season the other day. The first game.
I only
say
because I just hate that they did this during the season.
100%. 100%.
Do this during the summer.
It is so stupid. And it is.
Nobody is going to watch this.
Well,
nobody.
I mean, people are, you know, the attendance was okay, I guess. But
and what was the paid attendance?
Well, yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. But. New York beat Toronto 4-0 in the first game of the new Professional Women's Hockey League, which is what it's called. I don't know why they didn't go WNHL, but whatever. But yeah, we've talked about this before. It is a terrible idea to have this going on during the NHL season. It's, you know,
and during World Juniors,
it's
and
just
during College Bowl season. You could not pick a worse time of year to launch.
Let's put it this way. If you're going to cater to a certain demographic, then I guess it doesn't matter. Like if there are certain women and maybe fathers who want their little girls to watch hockey, maybe they're going to watch this.
No matter what. Yeah.
But if you want more eyeballs, if you want people like me to watch this,
right,
don't put it up against stuff that I have to put up as a priority over. If you put it in the summer when I'm jonesing for some hockey, I actually might check it out. And I'm not kidding about that, by the way, because I have watched women's Olympic hockey. I set aside time for that. Of course, that's not competing against the NHL.
Right.
Right. So if you put this product on at a time when there's no other hockey going on, and I, as a hockey fan, might actually give it some time, you might get me a little bit. I'm not going to say I'm invested every game, but, at this point in time, I'm not watching it. I'm sorry. It's nothing to do with them being women. I just don't have, I'm prioritizing what I'm going to watch, and that ain't it.
Hey, look, I don't watch the AHL either.
Correct.
I don't watch junior hockey. So it's not, the WNBA plays in the NBA's off season, and it plays up against nothing but baseball regular season. So it's going to get as large an audience as possible because there's nothing else to watch. If you're a basketball fan, yeah, you can watch some D-League stuff or whatever. But for the most part, if you're looking for some basketball action, the WNBA gets your fix. And if this was in the off season, if this launched right after the draft so they could promote it at the NHL draft saying, hey, don't forget the PWHL kicks off tomorrow with a game between New York and Boston, right here on NHL Network, right here on TNT, whatever the case may be, you would get people to watch it because there is no other hockey. But right now, you've got people watching the NHL, the World Juniors, college hockey, junior hockey, minor league hockey. They're all invested in seasons that are in progress. Trying to get their attention is a fool's errand. And it would be for any league launching right now. So I just think it's a terrible, I support the league and what they're trying to do, but set yourself up for success. And this ain't it. This is not it. Do it in the summer when you have the entire spotlight, and the league, I think, would thrive very quickly if they had done that instead. As it is, this is probably the last we're going to mention it on this show, where we might have mentioned it in the off season because we have no other hockey to talk about.
We are thrilled to be joined for the first time by Trevor Beggs, another one of my colleagues at the Locked On Sports Network. He is the host of Locked On Canucks, also writes for Daily High Vancouver and Nucks Misconduct. Trevor, great to have you on the Puck Podcast. Thanks for your time.
Hey, Eddie, nice to be here. And you know, it's usually I'm a grumpy Canucks fan, but life is good in Vancouver nowadays, and I haven't had to say that very often over the last 10 years.
Yeah, no doubt. There's no grumpiness at the moment. And obviously I have you on here to talk about the surprising Vancouver Canucks. Although I'm guessing people thought maybe they could be a wild card team, you know, if things go right, that they could be in the playoffs. But 37 games into the season, I don't know that a lot of people would have predicted 51 points, first place in the Pacific, top team in the Western Conference, and tied for second most points in the NHL. How surprised are you at what we've seen so far from the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah, I'm fairly surprised. like most people, I kind of saw the Canucks as a wild card team when I was doing my kind of preseason predictions for what the standings were going to look like. I had it the same as most people, kind of Vegas, Edmonton, and LA were easily the cream of the crop in the Pacific. And I did believe in the Canucks to be a wildcard team. I think, you know, there's enough skill on that roster. I like some of the moves that Albion has made. I think they were a bit unlucky probably in the past couple seasons based on the skill they had in their lineup. So I saw them as a wildcard team, and I was pretty bullish on that. But for them to be as good as they've been has definitely been a surprise. But it seems like a perfect culmination of a number of things, right? And obviously they were so dominant early in the season, and that's worn off a little bit in some parts of the game, but like you said, Eddie, hard to complain about a team that is that has 51 points and is tied for first overall in the Western Conference right now.
Well, one of the issues for Vancouver in the last few seasons is digging themselves too big of a hole to get out of, you know, not getting off to good starts. Obviously that hasn't been the case this season. What has been kind of the key to them getting off to a good start this year?
I think it was just one of the keys heading into the season, right? And really, the offseason started in April when the Canucks were eliminated from the playoffs. Rick Tocchet said, these guys need to work out. These guys need to come into camp in the best shape of their lives. Kind of all that same stuff we heard before. But I don't know if you remember this, Eddie, or if most listeners know about this, but the Canucks actually got fined for having offseason workouts in April. Because of the NHLPA agreements, players aren't allowed to get together for formal workouts and skates and things like that. So that was a sign to me, and Kyle and I kind of joked about Locked On Canucks that, yeah, the Canucks aren't here to mess around. You know, this is a team that's getting ready to go in April, breaking the NHLPA rules. Mm-hmm. And they came into training camp with the right mentality, right? I think there was pressure, right, with under Bruce Boudreau in the previous season. Obviously, he was ripped by Jim Rutherford for not having a good training camp and not having the team ready. So I think not only was Tocchet kind of pushing that forward and, you know, being a bit more stern at training camp, but I think the players had in the back of their minds, like, yeah, our president, our management did not like how we looked in training camp last year. We got to be good this year. So, but again, a number of things have fallen into place, right? You know, JT Miller solidifies himself as a center. Demko has a big bounce back. Besser goes from a guy nobody wanted to one of the top goal scorers in the league. And then finally have the right depth around this team as well, which is something Jim Benning failed to do for nearly a decade. So it was a perfect culmination of a lot of things.
Well, the Canucks lead the NHL in average goals per game, 3.84. They're also fifth best in goals allowed per game at 2.57. Obviously, that is a great combination to be a part of. Which one of those is more surprising to you, the offense or the defense?
The defense, for sure. And I do think it starts with Thatcher Demko and Casey DeSmith to an extent as well, because Casey DeSmith has been lights out. I think when you look at the numbers, look at the Canucks play, they're still a league average defense, right? But I think with the goaltending they have, they can get by with being a league average defense, because Demko, in my mind, is one of the best goalies in the NHL. He might be the best goalie in the NHL this season. Casey DeSmith has been a rock solid backup. And even though some of the fancy stats say the Canucks defense is league average, and I would probably agree with that, I think they've done a good job of limiting those high danger chances. And that was something under Boudreau where there was no system, there was no structure. The guys were just getting to the middle with ease. Scoring chances were all over the place. So, you know, Demko's, he is human after all. So the defense has surprised me, but, you know, to its credit, Tocchet has coached them up and they've looked better because of the structure and the personnel to an extent as well.
And you mentioned, obviously, the offense. I guess I mentioned it too, but JT Miller, fifth in the NHL in points with 50. Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson are both top 10 in the league in points, and Brock Besser among the top goal scorers. All those guys kind of, I guess, performing up to expectations, or have maybe one of them kind of jumped off the page a little bit?
Well, Besser's for sure jumped off the page, and I'll probably say Quinn Hughes has as well. I mean, you know, I talked about a couple minutes ago with Besser, right? But this is a guy who a year ago had his agent trying to seek out a trade because, you know, it was hard to trade a guy like Besser who was underperforming at a $6.6 million cap hit. So I think a number of teams could have had Besser for pennies on the dollar last season, but no one wanted to take on that cap hit. And thankfully that worked out pretty well for the Canucks. I didn't see Besser bouncing back to be on pace for 60 goals. Like, I thought if he hit 30, that would be a nice mark, but what he's been doing this season has been incredible. And to his credit, I think Besser's one of those guys too, who changed his off-season training regime. He came into camp. He looked really good right from the get-go in preseason. And he's actually scoring a lot of his goals from right in front of the net, scoring in a lot of the dirty areas. It's not quite the sniper Brock Besser that we saw in previous seasons. He's still doing that from time to time as well. But if you look at his goal chart, most of his goals are coming from within five feet of the net. And I'd say Hughes is the other big surprise. I was saying in a Locked On Canucks in the summer, I believe this guy could get to 100 points. But what's really said about Quinn Hughes is his shot. His, like, seemingly out of nowhere, this guy can now really rip the puck. And that was kind of one of the weaknesses in his game before. Like, we knew he could pile up the assists. He's an incredible playmaker. But you just see him in the offensive zone now, and he's often looking shot instead of looking pass. And some of the goals he scored this season, if you've seen the highlights, he's just absolutely ripping it.
We're talking with Trevor Beggs, the host of Locked On Canucks. And Rick Tocchet came on at the end of last season. Third coach in 3 years for the team. Obviously, he got a little bit of a taste of the team and the team of him at the end of last season. But what has he done, maybe specifically going into this season, that is obviously proving to be productive and getting results with the Canucks this year?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the structure that the team's playing with. I think that was a big part of it. But I think another big thing is just keeping guys accountable, no matter if you're a fourth line guy or a first line guy. I mean, obviously, you know, the depth players have played well, so there hasn't been much to quibble with your fourth line guys. But if guys aren't performing, they're out of the lineup or they're being demoted. We've seen Nils Höglander, who's played really well, kind of ride the pine for making a mistake. Andre Kuzmenko has been healthy scratched a couple times. JT Miller got benched in a period for taking a couple of penalties. Quinn Hughes has been benched at points. So I think that even though they're playing, they're one of the best teams in the NHL, Rick Tocchet is really keeping guys accountable. It's not just pampering the stars or even favoring some of the third line guys, because coaches love to do that as well. I think it's treating everybody equally, and that's been a big part of the success so far.
You briefly mentioned the name Patrick Alvin. For those who don't know, the Canucks general manager took over in 2022 for Jim Rutherford, and actually the first Swedish general manager in NHL history. I know that there were some issues with stability there in the front office a little bit, but seems like things have been smoothed over. It's easy to do, I guess, when you're having success. But what has he done in his short period of time to kind of put his stamp on this team?
I think it's just surrounding this team with the right depth pieces, right? You look at the Canucks before Alvin came, and the core was in place with Pettersson, with Hughes, with Demko. Like, those are the three pillars. You know, Kings fans know it very well. Eddie, you know it very well. But having those three pillars in place is pretty important, and I think it's how you kind of start a rebuild and start building a team who can contend for the Stanley Cup. But I think, you know, the biggest decision Alvin's had to make, oh, a couple of them have been, you know, choosing JT Miller over Bo Horvat. You know, I think at the time that was questioned in this market for sure in Vancouver, choosing to sign JT to a 7-year deal worth $8 million per season. But he's proven them right so far. And like you mentioned, one of the top guys in league scoring. His defensive game, I think, has been way better this season. He's matching up against the top lines of other teams on a night-to-night basis. I think he kind of gets them punished by the analytics darlings. in that regard. But JT Miller is looking like a complete hockey player. And then obviously you trade Bo Horvat, you pick up Philip Pronick. That was a big move. You choose to buy out Ekman Larson. And then you replace him with three other guys. And those guys have been, you know, Teddy Bluger, Ian Cole, Carson Soucy, Pew Suter, all the guys have played pretty well so far. So again, Jim Benning was a guy who for nearly a decade failed to surround the Canucks with secondary pieces that could help the core. And Patrick Alvinus managed to do it in seemingly the snap of his fingers.
And also some work still to be done. I know a big story, right? Elias Pettersson is a restricted free agent after this season. What's been the latest on getting him signed long-term?
Well, he's getting traded to Chicago. Didn't you hear about that, Eddie?
No, I didn't hear about that. Breaking news. Breaking news.
I think the latest around it is it kind of seems like it's in Pettersson's court right now. I know there were some rumblings before the season started about how the Canucks wanted to wait to see how Pettersson performed, but Jim Rutherford kind of did the media tour recently, late in 2023 here after he'd hit the 2-year mark with the organization. And he had basically said that, you know, they're ready to sign Pettersson. So I think it is really in Pettersson's court. Now, Pettersson said in his offseason interview that he didn't really want to negotiate during the season. So, I mean, I'd be kind of surprised if it gets done before the end of the season here. It'd be nice, but I'd be kind of surprised by it. But yeah, it's obviously going to be arguably the biggest contract in Canucks history. Well, it'll be the biggest by a dollar amount, but in terms of importance, it might be the biggest contract in Canucks history. And yeah, this is a player who's probably going to command around $11 million. So it's not chump change, that's for sure.
Obviously, every team and every fan base has a couple of things that can always be better, even for a team that's had the success like the Canucks so far this season. So maybe a couple of things that you're concerned about when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I'll bring up the special teams first. I don't want to say I'm concerned about the power play, but one of the reporters in this market pulled a pretty crazy stat that the Canucks power play is, you know, around 17%. If you take out those games against the Oilers and Sharks where they just piled up a bunch of power play goals, and 16%, 17% would be, you know, kind of 6th, 7th worst in the NHL. That was a bit jarring based on the talent they have there. And I think their power play has slowed recently. It hasn't been as dominant. I'm not as worried about that. The penalty kill, I'm a bit more worried about. They're currently, I think, 23rd or 24th in the league. I think goaltending has masked some of the problems on the kill. I don't think the kill's gotten a lot better. Now, some of the adjustments the team's made lately, I think they've decreased JT Miller and Elias Pettersson's usage on the PK. They've put more Teddy Bluger, more Dakota Joshua, giving some of those role players more of a chance. I think that's worked a bit better. But I would say it kind of, for me, it kind of goes back to PK and overall team defense. And the third thing I'll mention too is they're probably not generating enough offensively, which sounds weird. I know they lead the league in goals. But if you look at their shots per game, their shot attempts, their high danger chances, they're in the bottom half. If not, you know, I think for shots, they're bottom 5 in the league in terms of shots per game. So I think, you know, if they want to continue scoring at the rate they're scoring, they need to generate more chances because eventually some of that puck luck is going to dry up.
Well, obviously the Canucks have never won a Stanley Cup. The excitement, I'm guessing, is there, but perhaps maybe guarded. At this point, nobody wants to get their heart broken. But what's the kind of the feel of Canucks Nation there? Are you guys just eating up the success because it hasn't been there for a little while, or is this just kind of, you know, you're definitely excited, but on the other hand, you're wondering how is this somehow going to go wrong?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I think there's a lot of scar tissue in this fan base, right? Yeah. We talk about heartbreak, the Stanley Cup Finals, riots, a decade of mediocrity. I think one of the big debates among fans right now is, you know, kind of the analytics, the PDR saying the Canucks have been lucky versus the fans who are saying, you know, screw your numbers, this team's legitimate. So I think, as always, this fan base is a bit torn, a bit divided, but overall, I'd say the sentiment is excited, but there's always that in the back of your mind as a Canucks fan that something bad's going to happen because that's just the way it's gone for 50 plus years here.
Any thoughts on the Pacific Division so far this season? Obviously, you've had yourself, the Canucks, the defending Stanley Cup champs, Vegas maybe cooling off a little bit. The Kings are kind of still in that third spot, and then Edmonton and Seattle are suddenly starting to get a little bit hot. Not sure if they've got to keep that going, but your thoughts on the division so far?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it hasn't played out quite the way most predicted, and I kind of said it myself. I thought Vegas, Edmonton, LA would be the top three teams. It's interesting, in the short term of late, you kind of see LA struggling a bit, Vegas struggling a bit, and now all of a sudden it's kind of opened the door for Vancouver to maybe win the division. But like you said, Edmonton's right there. I think Edmonton's going to make the playoffs. They might even get a top three spot in the division. A team with McDavid playing the way he is, Draisaitl doing his thing. As long as they don't let in five goals a game, they're going to be fine. I think it's arguably at the top of it, one of the most competitive divisions in hockey. Like, I look at Edmonton, Vegas, LA, and Vancouver, and I think it potentially could be four of the best teams in the NHL. I'm not really a big believer in Seattle, not a believer in Calgary, and obviously the bottom of the division is kind of garbage, but I'm really curious to see how the playoff matches are going to line up. And as a Canucks fan, as someone who hasn't seen playoff hockey at Rogers Arena in Vancouver in this market since 2015, because the only time they made the playoffs was the weird COVID bubble year, I'm just super excited for what the matchups might look like. As a Canucks fan, I would love a matchup against the Oilers. I think a little Pettersson Hughes versus McDavid Draisaitl would be amazing. But again, all those four teams, Vegas, LA, Edmonton, and Vancouver, I think they're legitimate and excited to see who makes the most in the playoffs.
Yeah, that 2-3 matchup could be pretty good as well. Regardless, it's going to be a good team that's going to be out in the first round from the Pacific. Trevor Beggs, he is the host of one of the co-hosts, I should say, of Locked On Canucks, one of my colleagues there at the Locked On Sports Network. He also writes for Daily High Vancouver and Nux Misconduct. Trevor, great to have you on the Puck Podcast for the first time. Great stuff. Appreciate the time, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Anytime, Eddie. I'm looking forward to Kings Canucks later in the calendar year here. Let's go.
Time of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and we would like to thank all of you who are our very special supporters on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. And I understand we have a new patron this week, and we want to thank Weatherman Keefe for his support on Patreon. Much appreciated.
Or her,
I guess.
I guess it would be it is Weatherman.
Weatherman, yeah. Well, not Weatherwoman. But weather person. If you would like to support us on Patreon, we would greatly appreciate it. Patreon.com/puckpodcast. Thanks to all who have and are currently supporting us there. As always, we give a shout out to our friend Dave at Tally Hockey Jerseys. Go to tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com and you can get some Puck Podcast merchandise. We've got the different styles of hats and jerseys there. If you want to support the show, we would appreciate that. And if you need custom hockey jerseys, then Dave is the man to see about that. Let us get to the emails this week. And Doug, as usual, you will lead us off.
And we start with our friend Chris in North Belmore, Long Island. That's in New York.
Who I met when I was in New York.
Okay. And if you say so. He says, hello, Happy New Year, Eddie, Doug, and all Puck Podcast listeners. I am not going to debate the use of Michigan versus lacrosse when it comes to those goals where the puck is lifted off the ice on a stick rather than being shot. However, if you want to see all 9 of them in the NHL so far, search YouTube for all of the lacrosse plays and find the most recent NHL video. It starts with Svechnikov in 2019 and ends with Bedard and Zegras on the same day in 2023. Zegras has the most with 3 goals of his own, plus he got an assist from behind the net on Sonny Milano's goal. That's 4 amazing goals from Trevor Zegras, if you're keeping track. All the best for a safe, happy, and healthy new year and 52 episodes of the Puck Podcast. It's hard to think, but yes. Chris in North Belmore, Long Island. So I think that settles it right there, is what he's saying. If you go to YouTube, the filter says all of the lacrosse plays, not all of the Michigan plays, the lacrosse plays.
Well, that doesn't settle anything. It's just what one guy who posted him called it.
Just saying that it is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Our next email comes from Ozzy, so grab a cup of coffee and sit back and enjoy the comedic stylings of Ozzy Mesa, who says, gentlemen, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. A happy new year, you both, to you and all your listeners. It's been a hectic 2023 in the NHL in both terms of storylines and the standings, from expectations that have been evaporated to surprises that seem to come out of nowhere. I, like many people, have my resolutions for the new year set, and I also like to hear what others set out for themselves and what they'd like to accomplish. It's just something that motivates and secondhand encourages me With this in mind, I thought teams maybe could use a suggestion for a resolution. No worries, I'll keep it to the Eastern Conference in a quick bullet point format for everyone's sake and wrap up next week with the Western Conference. So in no particular order and per division, in the Atlantic, the Boston Bruins, there can't be any resolution for this team other than the Cup. They've dropped the ball this year, they have dropped the ball year after year since 2011, and no historic season will make up for that Cup they lost in 17 seconds in 2013 to Chicago, or how they failed to show up for Game 7 against St. Louis in 2019. Florida Panthers go all in for the Cup run this year. They will have a lot of contracts to re-sign and extend, and many will come with a pay raise at the end of the year. Toronto Maple Leafs, goalie, get a goalie. For the love of all that is cold and icy, get a goalie. Yes, they've called up Hildeby, the Hildebeest from the AHL, so maybe he will be the answer. I seriously doubt that, but I like the nickname. For the Tampa Bay Lightning defense, their holes are starting to show, and they may want to at least consider speaking with Stamkos about a change if they don't intend to re-sign him. He's still extremely productive and could get Tampa a lot in return, which could help after the Janot trade. For the Red Wings, patience. This team could be in a much better place if Moritz Seider and Jake Walman weren't the only capable D-men on this team, but with Sherratt, Hull, Petrie, and Gosh the Spear all on MNTCs, no movement trade clauses, things get complicated. Sell what you can at the deadline, however you can, and make a honest youth movement next season. You'll be glad to see your prospects flourish with cap space. For the Canadians, deadline capital. You're rebuilding, and it's a better-than-expected season this year, but don't lose sight of the goal. Sell high at the deadline and during the summer to continue to bring up the more NHL-ready prospects without rushing. For the Sabres, make a move. Yes, Kevin Adams had little to work with at the beginning to build this team, both in terms of experience, a team, or surrounding front office, but he has now for a couple of years. This team had no reason not to make the playoffs this season. It may already be too late for this team this year. And if it is, it's because a move wasn't made to address the glaring need for a goalie for the summer. And for the Senators, coach, get one, an actual one. This interim thing doesn't work on a team that is begging for structure. Their slow starts and late game collapses are indicative of coaching issues, and not much has changed since Martin took over. Part of that may be that the team is already in a tailspin, and knowing that he's only interim makes it that much harder for this team to buy in. Doug, would you like to continue the email?
Certainly. The New Year's resolutions for the Metropolitan Division teams, and he starts with the Rangers. He's going in order of standings. So Rangers, a cup, go get it. This team has a great top six, good depth, mobile defensemen, puck-moving defensemen, stay-at-home defensemen, offensive defensemen, and two great goalies. The only thing holding them back is what's held them back in the past, their stars going cold in the playoffs. Hurricanes, get a non-porcelain goalie. What happened to Frederik Andersen was a freak occurrence, but Raanta was known as a papier-mâché goalie since being on the Blackhawks in 2013. Kochetkov is capable but unproven, and Carolina already has to play by committee. When you think about it, they're just the Islanders with slightly better scoring. As for the Flyers, discipline. They're currently third and very possible that they could make it into the playoffs. This team needs to sell at the deadline. They have players that they can sell high on that realistically would not be part of the future in Philly. They can really build sustained success if they can leverage Konechny, Frost, or Tippett. Of course, I'm not saying get rid of them all, but bottoming out next year and ending with the chance to draft Michael Misa and Michkov coming to the team not long after. Stay the course, Philly. Fun fact, Ilya Bryzgalov is still technically on the books. Wow. I did see an update, by the way, Eddie, that Michkov may not be here till 2026. And that is the risk. That's why he fell in the draft, was that you don't know when he's coming out of Russia. And Russia is saying not going to be anytime soon. Ozzy continues with the Islanders' New Year's resolution. Scoring. Fornicating scoring. Please join the rest of the population in 2023 and get some capable scoring or a coach that can unlock it in the players they have. Barzal, Horvat, and Dobson have 30-plus points in spite of coaching, not because of it. As for the Capitals, help for Ovechkin. I'm aware of the reality that the Capitals are unable to rebuild and at best can only retool around Ovi, but Backstrom's exit was unplanned and Pacioretty was meant to be part of this team as well. This has caused Ovi to be on an island of sorts and forced him to make to move more to find scoring chances, which I think he never really had to do with Backstrom being one of the best playmakers, not to grace not only Washington, but the NHL. As for the Devils, get NHL goaltending. Whether it's an injury or between the ears, it's clear that Vitek Vanacek has regressed significantly this year. Akira Schmid was sent down, and Nico Daws is off to a good start in one game, but they'll need more if they have any hopes of making the playoffs. Time is running out for them. As the Penguins, rip the cord. You can take that in one of two ways. Rip the cord and go all in. Trade what you can for depth and defense for this team to give Sid, Gino, and Letang one last dance. And then there's the way I'm thinking about it, and rip the cord to stop the free fall. Have a heart-to-heart with the core and really figure out what you want to accomplish. I keep comparing this team to Chicago because it's what they remind me of in terms of stubbornness. Both teams thought they could just retool and make it back to the cup only to be met with reality. The Blackhawks have already experienced their two franchise players leaving very unceremoniously and had little to show for it. Finally, the Blue Jackets. Major reconstructive surgery. I'm talking Nick Cage, John Travolta, face-off extremes of change. The whole front office needs to take a bow and let a new broom sweep clean. New minds and new ideas to take hold and direct this franchise that has been in perpetual sports purgatory for the better part of my life watching hockey. Well, that does it for me, gents. Well wishes to you and yours for this new year and the rest of the listeners, Ozzy. And we thank him very much for that. Ozzy, I agree with almost everything you said there. It's hard not to agree. The Flyers, I don't know about that one, though. That one, I would say, I wouldn't sell off. I think building a winning mentality in that franchise is important with the young players you have. So try and make the playoffs this year. Don't go all in, but try to make the playoffs, not sell off. But the rest of them, it is, especially Columbus. I think it's Jarmo Kekalainen's time to get out of the GM chair and let somebody else have a crack at running that franchise.
Our next email comes from Youssef, and he is in the UK. And he says, "Hey, Doug and Eddie, Happy New Year. With it being 2024, I wondered to myself, how long have I been listening to the Puck podcast? And I realized it's been over 10 years now. So I thought about it, and it was time that I sent in my first email." Well, very, very nice. Glad to have you. He says, "I started listening back in September 2012 when I was at university, and it's incredible to think the number of milestones that have happened in my life since I started listening to you guys. I'm sure you two feel the same. You've been on a run that Phil Kessel would be proud of, I'm sure, and it's an insane accomplishment. As someone from the UK, I fell in love with hockey when I was staying with my uncle in New York City, and he got me tickets to go and see the Rangers play. Why would I want to go see ice hockey?" I said, but from the second the puck dropped, I was hooked. When I got back from New York City, I wanted to find a way to stay in touch with hockey, and that's how I found your podcast. A diehard Rangers fan, I've been on multiple trips to MSG now. It's cool to see how well we're doing this season. I just hope we can sustain it into the playoffs. I hope that the Breadman's new look will give him a newfound edge to perform on that stage. A repeat of last year would be so demoralizing that I can't really allow myself to get too excited by how this season is going. Maybe that kind of pessimism is a result of being a football, is a result of the football team I support. And no, I don't mean the Giants, although pessimism is real there too. Born and bred in London, I support my local team, Charlton Athletic, a club with a storied history and a strong fan base. We've suffered far too much in recent years with terrible owners and an abject squad. This season was supposed to be a turning point with new owners and a star signing, but instead it's been the worst I can remember and the lowest point I've ever felt as a fan. All that to say, I totally get where Doug is coming from when he says he has decided to stop watching Ducks games. That's exactly how I feel about Charlton. I love the club, and that will never change. Going to games is one of my favorite things to do in the world, but that dejected, disappointing feeling of watching something you love underperform so woefully is hard to endure. Anyway, thanks for all you do. Your hard work and dedication is evident in the constant quality of your work. I listen to a lot of podcasts on hockey, and yours is still my favorite. As a closer, I have a question for you. What are both of your hottest takes of what has happened or what will happen the rest of the season?" And that, again, is from Youssef. Youssef, thank you for listening for so long. That is, I appreciate you sharing a little bit of your story. And thanks for finally sending an email to us. Hopefully it will not be the last. Hopefully it won't be every 10 years.
Yes, I would tell you not to wait that long, Youssef, because we will not be doing this show in 10 years. I can guarantee you.
Probably a good bet. Probably a good bet.
There is a expiration date on this show, and It is within the next 10 years. I guarantee that. But thank you very much for the kind words and support. And I'm glad you, I'm not glad, but I appreciate the understanding of where I'm at with the Ducks and your Charlton team. What's your hottest take on the rest of the season, Eddie?
I don't know. I'm not really big on the hot takes, to be totally honest with you.
Just a prediction for the year to come. And yeah. I have one that I will start with while you think.
Okay.
The Maple Leafs are going to miss the playoffs, and combined with Canada not meddling in the World Juniors, Canada will be in an absolute panic about what has gone wrong for their hockey as a whole.
All right. Gosh, I don't know. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Youssef. I don't know
the
that
guy works in sports talk radio.
I know.
And cannot come up with a hot take.
I don't really like hot takes, to be honest with you.
just a prediction. Forget a hot take. Just a prediction.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the cup? We're halfway through the season. Who's going to win the cup? This silence is great radio.
Well, I mean, great I want to be. I want it to be thoughtful. I want it to.
Well,
be
I'm saying, not just articulate your thoughtfulness. Take us through your thought process.
Yeah.
Use your words.
I'll say. You know what? Hot take and prediction. I predict the New Jersey Devils would win the cup at the beginning of the year. I'll stick with it. How's that for a hot take? Not even
is it
in the playoffs.
Because they're the Devils.
No. That's that's exactly right. That's exactly
Do you have new glasses frames, by the way?
No. I lost the glasses I normally wear. I have no idea where they are. And so I've got a bunch of different like readers that I use, and I don't like any of the other ones. So I have these and they're like, I don't know, silver.
They're clear.
Yeah, they're like clear.
They look clear.
Yeah.
All right.
You don't like it?
No. I just noticed them while you were thinking and thought I would ask you.
Yeah.
In considering they can't see you.
Right.
That's one of the things that changed in the 10 years or the 16 years we've been doing the show. You didn't used to wear glasses.
No.
And now you do.
You have always worn glasses.
I have. Well, not always. I was not born with them on. That would have been shocking.
I would disagree with that.
But the trouble of losing your glasses is needing to find them.
Yeah.
Needing them to find.
And I've also done I don't know. You've been more Crosby. I have been Ovechkin, as I have definitely gotten grayer since we've been doing the show.
No, there's no doubt. Yeah, I'm holding up pretty good. Huh? Yeah. I actually had somebody at work ask me if I dye my hair.
Oh,
as they were surprised I have not gone gray. Mm-hmm. And, cause they have. And I said, no, I said, but thank you, I guess. I was going to ask you something else about the, did your glasses that you lost fly off your face when you slipped on Spencer's pee or Herbie's pee?
No, because I don't like wearing the glasses, but I do it cause I have to, cause I'm more of a fan of being able to see and read than not. But no, I don't like when I'm walking around the house, I don't have them on, not at all.
Okay. They don't go flying off your.
No, they're only on when I have to read something. And
all right.
So that's required for this show.
You don't use them when you wear. Is that why you got the big TV so that you didn't have to wear your glasses to watch TV?
No, I actually, no, it's, I could see great from distance up close. Not blind as a bat, but damn near. If bats are even blind, I don't even know. Just a saying.
Yeah, I don't think their vision is great, which is why they use the sonar.
Yeah,
it's gotten worse. My nearsightedness. I can see close up fine, so I have to take them off to read. I don't have to, but I prefer to, and that's gotten more inconvenient as the years go by. As I read more on my phone or reading something. And then I want to look up at the TV and I have to, it's the opposite of, you know, how they were at the end of your nose to read something, but you can look over them to see distance. Yeah. I'm the opposite. I need them up above like a visor so that I can look down and see.
You're like Jay Bomeister when he used to wear his visor on to protect his forehead.
Yes. Yes. I need the reverse bifocals. The bottom half is clear glass and the top half is prescription. Let's get to our next email. It's Paul from San Francisco. He says, greetings, gents. I hope you have both had a memorable holiday season, and sorry, not sorry for the length of this email, as I want to give a little bit of pushback to Doug's recent power play in his last episode over the status of our beloved Anaheim Ducks. First off, Doug's equated the Ducks to music bands and TV shows of old, where we remembered them at their height and now becoming a perpetual shell of their former selves because household names like Teemu Selanne, Scott Niedermayer, Ryan Getzlaff, and Corey Perry are no longer with the club in a Ducks uniform. Is this any different than Blackhawks fans watching household names like Tane, Caves, Crawford, and Keith move on? Yes, guys like Getzlaff and Perry will be forever in our hearts because of the 2007 Cup team and the subsequent teams that followed, but that torch has clearly been passed onto guys like Zegras, McTavish, Carlson, and Minchikov. Cores come and cores go is my point here. Well, at least the Blackhawks got multiple cups out of their core is one thing I would say. Second off, you mentioned that you are essentially done watching Ducks games because of where they currently are in the standings, as well as where they were the past 5 years. While you are within your right to choose what you want to see or not see on TV, just know that seasons like this are crucial to a team's evolution from bottom dwellers to cup contenders over time. The underlying numbers will tell you that from a defensive standpoint, the Ducks went from one of the worst last year to something respectable this year, and they're doing it with four defensemen that have all played a combined less than 40 games last year. To top that off, a majority of the games they lost were either by one goal or one goal plus empty netters from the opposition, meaning they were in most of the games, and they are currently doing it with a rotating door of injuries to star players like Zegras, Carlson, McTavish, and Terry. Compared to that to last year under Dallas Aikens, where the team would just essentially give up after a goal was scored by the opposition. Finally, I'm not entirely sure what your expectations were for our beloved Ducks this year, Doug, but for me, I just wanted to see a better on-ice process and better 5-on-5 baseline from this team, and it is trending in that direction. Sure, the results might not be there right now, and lots of on-ice elements are still missing from a 5-on-5 standpoint. They are slowly undoing the 4 years of damage that Dallas Aikens did on this team, but at least the Ducks are getting beat this year compared to them getting destroyed on a nightly basis last year. Think of them as a young, upcoming rock band that has lots of potential, but are still working out some kinks. Might not be there to do likewise until you start seeing the results reflect more of that process. But I will continue watching Rome being slowly built up into the empire it will be in a few years' time. Paul from San Francisco. And Paul, God bless you. I certainly hope you are right. My fear is that we are seeing the Ducks become the Senators. We're seeing the Ducks become the Sabres. And they're just going to suck forever because they can't attract free agents. The core never develops into anything that's actually meaningful. And that's my fear. And that's why I gave up, because I'm like, I'm not going to be the Senators fan 10 years in that's still thinking this is the year we turn the corner. I'm not seeing it. I get the stats and the metrics and all that stuff. I can't even think of the term, the Corsi and all that stuff. Great.
Fenway.
No, what's the name for that general term?
Oh, analytics.
I get that the analytics say the Ducks are better. I'm not seeing it. What I see is the same thing I've seen for the last 5 years, a team that can't score enough goals regularly enough, that gives up too many goals, takes too many penalties, and they're better. They're no doubt they're better and more competitive than they were last season. Last season was literally the worst hockey I've ever seen in my life. That was just dung on ice for 82 games. But them being better than dung on ice doesn't mean it's good. They're still, the standings are where they are, and they're terrible. And I'm hoping, but I'm not going to stick around. Certainly not going to waste my time watching it when there are other games and other things I can do. But God bless you. I hope you are right, and I hope we're looking at a playoff run in the next year or two.
Let's get to my final email. This is from Jim the German, who I also met in New York not long ago. He says, Happy New Year and all the rest. That's customary to say at this time of the year. I keep hearing everyone talking about how surprising it is that Philly started out as they did and where they still are in the standings. Everyone is giving Torts his due credit for getting the team up for each game and battling night after night. But I don't hear anyone giving credit to the one big change from last year, the change we all expected to be what turned this team around. The person I am talking about is the new president of hockey operations, Keith Jones. His leadership in the organization has been the oil that is making this machine work. Okay, I almost got through all that without laughing. But I still want to
say, you've got to be kidding me.
But I still wanted to put it out there in the world. This year was the first time I was able to watch the Winter Classic. I have to say I enjoyed it. My highlights were seeing Nancy Wilson on stage and hearing Wayne Gretzky say, "That football guy." I can only assume he was talking about Marshawn Lynch, the minority owner of the Kraken. Seeing the first shutout wasn't bad either. Be well, and I hope there are no more Herbie slips and slides injuries in the Garcia household. And that is from Jim the German. Yeah, we didn't mention that. Former Seattle Seahawks star running back Marshawn Lynch like led the team right out onto the out of the tunnel.
They had every Seattle sports living legend they could get on hand for that one. And that was fun to see. And if you're a Seattle sports fan, I'm sure it was amazing to see them all in one place. But they had Supersonics.
Not a bad day for Seattle sports, with later that night, the University of Washington winning their college football playoff game and advancing to the national championship. That's a it's a night to remember for Seattle sports fans.
And you talk about coming back from the dead. You and I went to see our Fresno State Bulldogs play at Washington many years ago, and we kicked their butts. And we listened to the post game show, and it was apocalyptic. And now they have a former Fresno State coach running their program, and they are in the national championship. So good luck to the Huskies. I will be rooting for you in the national championship. It would be amazing irony if the Pac-12 won the football national title and then immediately stopped being a thing right after the game. The last thing they do is win the national title, because, and they all scattered because we can't compete without leaving the anyway. I'm sure Washington State and Oregon State are rooting for you as well, because they would get a lot of money in the Pac-12 coffers going
hell
forward.
Hell yes.
Next up, our final email, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. He says, "Gentlemen, all the best, everyone, in 2024. Doug, you were asking what New Year's celebrations are like in Lake Echo. I wish I had some interesting esoteric traditions to share with you, but my guess is my gathering was decidedly similar to those in California, except for the pretty white view through our northern windows. I'll say this, I've turned in the New Year twice in the American Southwest, and I far prefer your palm trees to our snowmen." Certainly. "You also asked about Kwanzaa. As a white dude, I'm probably not the best source of information. However, I have taught Black history in high school for a dozen years, so I'm going to give it a go. Kwanzaa is a secular holiday celebrated by the people of African descent all over the world. It was invented in the 1960s to promote the following seven values, each expressed in Swahili. Unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. The celebration is held annually in late December and includes candle lighting and a communal feast called Karamu." Man, there you go. "Okay, let's talk some hockey. Doug, I'm surprised you are fed up watching Anaheim games. Certainly the team isn't winning much, but this duck soup is just beginning to simmer. You've got the makings of something special with a core that includes Mason McTavish, Trevor Zegras, Leo Carlson, Jamie Drysdale, Pavel Minchikov, and Olin Zellweger. I'm not suggesting an impending Duck dynasty, but Anaheim's youth is as good as almost any NHL franchise. I know watching a team that isn't competitive yet isn't ideal, but seeing the development of all this phenomenal young talent might still be half decent." I will, you remind me, because you mentioned Zegras as well, I would love to see them trade Trevor Zegras. That guy is never going to fulfill his potential, is always just going to be a highlight guy that makes plays here and there, never going to be a star player, in my opinion, that gets you 80 plus points a year.
I've thought the same thing, but never wanted to say it to sound like a hater, but I agree with you on that.
I would love to see them trade him in the offseason. Love it. He's not it. Mason McTavish, all in on that guy. Absolutely love him. Leo Carlson, love him. Pavel Minchikov, would kiss him on the cheek and shake his hand and tell him, "God bless you. I hope you stay the Duck the rest of your career." Olin Zellweger, haven't seen him yet. Jamie Drysdale, play more than 20 games a season, then get back to me. Trevor Zegras, enjoy the rest of the season. Maybe at the deadline we move you. If not in the offseason, that would be ideal in my opinion. "Speaking of weak teams," Hart continues, "the Flames need to fire their coach again. In my lay opinion, Ryan Huska is doing an abysmal job. Jonathan Huberdeau had 0 points in December. Zero in December, Eddie. And is on pace for 35. A few years ago, he was a Hart Trophy candidate. He's still only 30. Now he's like a midline forward. Huska's fed up with the diminutive yet talented Dylan Dubé and has dropped him to the fourth line. It's a horrible fit for both a fourth line and the player. Andrew Mangiapane scored 35 goals 2 years ago. He has 6 so far this year and is stuck on the third line. Elias Lindholm scored 82 points 2 years ago and 64 last year. He's on pace for 52 this year. Admittedly, Huska has done a solid job developing Connor Zeri, but on the whole, this team is a grease fire. If Sutter was the problem, Huska is not the solution. Have a great week, all. Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. Yeah, Calgary, man. That is a frustrating team to watch because the team, the talent is there in net and at forward, and it just does not produce results night and night and night after night after night after night. So very frustrating in Calgary. And if we have any more Flames fans, I'd love to hear from you on what you think of the approach Hart is saying of change the head coach again. But you got to tell me, do you have somebody in mind, Hart? Do you want a retread? Or do you want somebody that has never coached in the NHL before? Or do you want Mike Babcock? Show me your phones.
I think we know the answer to that one.
Yeah. All right. But that is it for our email portion of the show. If you have anything you want to chime in on, anything we talked about this week or anything that happened in the world of hockey in the past week, feedback@puckpodcast.com is the email address to send it to. We are on, technically, on Twitter, X, @puckpodcast. We are on Facebook @puckpodcast. We're on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. But mostly we're here every week for your listening pleasure. Year round, every week for 16 years and counting. In fact, I think it's 18 years now. We started in 2006. We're in 2024. So it's been a while since we've been going, and no end in sight, but we will not be going 10 years from now. I can guarantee you that. So, but anyway, we'll be back next week with another episode for my partner, Eddie Garcia. I am Doug Stolhan. We thank you so much for making us a part of your new year, a part of your week, and letting us join you to talk some hockey. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you will spread the word to other hockey fans you may know. And we hope to hear from you soon in our feedback portion of the show. And we hope you will join us next week for another episode of the Puck Podcast.